C1SP. Number 13B.
Well, I have so only a few minutes left, and we take the last subject, love. You see, having shown in the section of truth that we have always to deal with the mental, never with the physical, and that there is at the bottom of everything a mental cause, and that the mental is a much wider and much broader realm than we usually are conscious of. The question now is, but is this mental realm real? Or is it not real? And so in the last subject, she asked this question, well then, how are veritable ideas to be distinguished from illusions? So here she comes to the root of everything and says, now, that's the first time she puts such a question, and it's practically the first time, not quite, but practically the first time she uses the term ideas. And it's the first time she asks after the nature of ideas and defines the origin of ideas, only here in the fourth chapter. And she says, well, we have to learn always the origin of it. Not because something is mental, we can call it idea. You see, in common use of the language in the world, everything that is mental, people call idea. And something is only called an illusion in the common use of the term when it is abnormal to the normal belief. Then it's called an illusion. But that's only a mortal classification of idea and illusion. Here we come to the scientific classification of idea and illusion. And the scientific classification of idea and illusion is not asking if it is something normal, which we call normal or abnormal, but it's a scientific analysis which says, where does it come from? Whatever comes from mind is an emanation from mind, and that is an idea. And whatever comes from the human brain, from human belief, is not an idea. So finally here, we get the pith of the whole second part, which deals with mentality, and says and asks now, what is real mentality, and what is veritable mentality, and what is elusive mentality, and makes this distinction. And then goes on and shows in the second paragraph that one has to be very careful about this distinction of idea and illusion. She says, it is true that, for instance, to love one another as oneself is a divine idea. That this is an idea. It is not physical. You can't physically touch it nor define it. Love for one another is something which is physically not definable. And she says, it is an idea. But she says, more or less between the lines, be careful, because that love can be as well a profound adoration, or it can also manifest blasphemy. She says, be careful that the imitations of an idea can be like an idea of love, namely profound adoration. But if it isn't born from the divine mind in us, if it isn't really of the nature of idea, if it is just a mental concept to love one another as to love one's neighbor as oneself, then if it is only a belief, then it is apt to be used in two different ways. It is apt to be used for the good and for evil. It can be used, you just have to excite that belief, and it excite the organ of veneration or religious faith, and the individual manifests profound adoration. And excite it in the opposite direction, and it manifests blasphemy, and it blasphemes. Say blasphemes? Yes, blaspheme. And so this shows that a mortal belief which tries to imitate an idea can always be recognized under the stress of circumstances. One time it is good and under the garment of good, and the next time it is under the garment of evil. It has both sides. And that is so true in any religion and in any spiritual development, or in any religious development. One always finds from time to time people who adore science, who just feel they can't live anymore without science, and begin to adore and adore, and the next time you hear of them, they left it. See? Or they put somebody on the pedestal, you see, for years and years, and nothing is so good as that one which they have put on the pedestal, and the next day one wakes up and one is fallen down from the pedestal. It's not love as an idea, but love as a belief. So she is here very careful and says, let's see the distinction between idea and belief. They seem, for the first moment, as, because they are mental, both mental, they can be verwechselt, confused. But it always will show itself, because an idea always develops itself and develops it, and it always develops itself in one direction, in the good. Whereas a belief is always two-sided. Sooner or later it always swings from one extreme to the other. And then she goes on and says, and be careful that the phenomena of mentality are really and clearly to be distinguished. It takes, for instance, the phenomena of eloquence, and shows that eloquence, which is an outward phenomena, you can see and hear how if somebody is eloquent and just speaks for 4 hours without stopping, and so one has to be careful if that ability is really an idea or born of an idea or not, because eloquence, as she says, can come from various origins. Therefore you always go back to the origin. Where does it come from? She says, well, eloquence can re-echo the strains of truth and love, you see, can be an idea. But eloquence, she says, can also be a gift, just a gift. She says it can also be the result of education, of, how you call it, erudition?
Yes.
Of erudition, you learn it in schools, and when one learns it enough, one can acquire this ability. But that, again, has its origin not in truth, you see. Or it can be, as in spiritualism, that the medium becomes very eloquent and can talk for 4 hours too, because it is under the strong belief that an outward aid is at work, that the medium is under the power of a spirit, and that being under this belief, that medium loses its restriction, loses its limits, and becomes eloquent. So she shows four or five different origin, you see, for the same phenomena. Therefore, she shows how we have to be careful when one sees a phenomena. And if one is not careful, one could attribute it at once to one or the other, to Christian science or to spiritualism, or to mesmerism, or to any ism. And so what she wants to show is that there are always, for a phenomena, there can be various origins. And we have to go back to the origin in order to learn how true and how veritable that phenomena is. If that phenomena, or that phenomenon, is an idea, and it is an idea when it is the expression of God, when it is the expression of man's unity with God. But it is always an illusion if it has its root and its origin in human belief, whatever that human belief is. That human belief can have many forms, you see. It can be the human belief, we are very strongly on the human belief, that through erudition we can attain some abilities. That if we learn and learn and learn and learn, that finally we get a certain ability. We can be under the belief that, well, that is a gift. I just got it. You see, that's my good luck and so on. It's a belief in heredity. It's a belief in luck. Or it may be a belief in astrology. And says, well, I'm born under this star, that's why I have this and this faculty and ability. Or it is the belief that if I lose my entity, my identity, and put myself under the ability of another spirit, that then that spirit speaks through me, that then that spirit works through me, and I have the identical ability as that spirit. That's another belief. But one belief is just as good as the other, because belief is belief. There is only one distinction, namely between idea and illusion, between idea and belief. But the beliefs can be thousandfold. They can be millionfold. So we begin to realize more and more, you see, the importance of awaking really to a constant conscious recognition that we begin to line up our consciousness to mind and not to beliefs. Then she goes on and shows that really in the divine mind lies all the wonders of being. That mind possesses of itself all beauty and poetry and the power of expressing itself, and that mind is really heard when the senses are silent, and that this mind, which has the infinite capabilities, really express themselves and define themselves through the influence of soul, which confers the freedom, which explains then the phenomena of improvisation. See, that's the big thing, that the moment we really are one, more and more one with mind and with spirit and with soul, and therefore have put away beliefs and the reliance on matter and the testimony of the physical senses, in that measure as we are one with mind and spirit and soul, as she shows here in this paragraph, then we are one with the principle of being, and principle is always interpreting itself through its infinitude. That's the beauty of it. See, then we touch the principle, which is so infinite in its expression. And so at that point, we always touch the principle of infinite interpretation, or as she calls it here, as that principle which explains the phenomena of improvisation. A side note is scientific improvisation. You see, it's no more learning, arduous learning. It's no improvisation, it's just a flow, a natural flow, an original, spontaneous flow. And that is really what, little by little, we should attain, that through our understanding of mind and of spirit and soul, we become so principled in our whole attitude that that principle begins to speak through us. That's the truth about spiritualism. That's a true fact about the counterfeit spiritualism. That principle speaks through us in infinite improvisation. But that sounding through is something which is real, which is divine, and which is not sniffing always in that heap, in that garbage heap of mortal mind, where it only stinks and stinks. But there is the divine order of the divine principle, which always emits the effulgence of that divine order, which gives the variety and the beauty and the wideness and the infinitude of the spiritual realm. And then she goes on and gives some three other little passages which I cannot take anymore, but which show just the one fact, which show that because mortal belief is not substance, that in belief, that therefore in belief we can do all sorts of wonders, that with opium eaters and opium and hashish eaters, that they can do marvels. See, that a world of marvels opens up to them too. But the moment they awake, they are in the old position. Because mortal mind, mortal belief is not divine substance. And because it is not divine substance, it cannot do real wonders. It's only illusions and delusions. This shows what mortal mentality and mortal knowledge are. Just delusions. See, it shows that that mentality can bring about wonders too. But there are always wonders within mortality, within mortal thought. We can travel far, we can do wonders, we can do the most wonderful thing in our dreams, and if we have had a bit of opium and so on, we can even do more wonders, and we see a world of wonders and a world of beautiful odors and so on. But it's no substance in it. So it doesn't last, it isn't real, it falls to pieces and brings us backward and backward and backward. Whereas through spiritual culture, because ideas are substance, they work, they stay, they are immortal, they are substance. And so little by little we come out of the mortal mentality and reach the immortal. And then the third part starts and said, therefore, claim your right to be the Son of Man. The admission to oneself that man is God's own likeness sets men free to master the infinite idea. You see, then the third part opens a very different proposition. A liberation starts in where we claim our rights to the Son of God and where we experience the rights of the Son of God.